All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
That's me.
We are going to be talking about all kinds of...
What's our credentials, Andrew? Why are we authorized to talk about MLS? What qualifies us to do this?
I think I've spent a lot of time staring at the games and decisions made by this league. And also, I am a journalist who's previously worked for the Toronto Star, the UBC in Vancouver, and I run on and off a soccer blog called Little Rubber Pellets.
Which and is I'm fantastic, currently, by the way.
Mm-hmm. And I'm currently an editor at Howler Magazine, which is a wonderful literary magazine about soccer that you should check out. We are going to be reviewing games that happen in the league every week. And in the meantime, but we're going to start today with a little bit of review to catch up on where we are, sort of as the playoff push is its most important. Because we've learned in past seasons that it really is not about what your form is at the beginning of the season. It's about how you finish the regular season and what kind of form you have going into the playoffs. So,
indeed. I have no credentials, by the way, beyond owning season's tickets to the Whitecaps and an MLS Live subscription, which I just feel like I'm paying to be entitled to have many opinions about MLS.
Right, absolutely. It's like, eventually you give the league enough money.
Yeah, and then you get to have a podcast about it.
For some reason, we keep buying jerseys and tickets to events in various cities, despite the craziness in the way that the league sets its rules.
Mm-hmm. Team form.
I mean, yes. But that gives us a lot of opinions, which is wonderful.
True. How do we want to do this rundown and review? I mean, obviously we can't just, well, we could, but we're not going to just review every game that has happened this week. There's still a few more to go today, but we're going to try to catch up with where the season is at so that hopefully we'll get everyone up to speed and see also what we're trying to do here with this podcast. But how do we want to approach this?
Well, let's start with, Nick, you've got season's tickets.
Yeah.
How has this season felt so far to you? Like, what is what have you enjoyed so far this year, both about the Whitecaps and MLS in general? Like, what are your experiences so far?
I have no opinions about this. I'll try to keep it under 4 hours. Honestly, I think the biggest thing is that every year, I've had season's tickets for the last 2 years, but the 2 years before I went to most of the games. Just the increase in quality around the league every year. There's such a major difference from year to year that you see just exponential growth across the league. Obviously, the expansion teams coming in helps because other teams sort of notice when teams like Atlanta are spending big money to bring in some really excellent players and build something that looks to be more long-term, then all the other clubs seem to take notice and act accordingly. Things that I've enjoyed as a Whitecaps fan is, despite how it may feel, having some actual consistency to this season. I probably just jinxed it, but the sort of summer slump that has happened every year consistently really hasn't happened this year. When we've lost a game, we've come back and drawn, or we've won. There really hasn't been major streaks where the team is just getting pummeled. That being said, there's the inconsistency in the fact that we can't seem to put to bed teams that are at the bottom of the table, even in the Eastern Conference, and yet we can go to a place like Orlando, as was the case yesterday, and pull off a victory against a side that at times looked to be a much, much better side. They just couldn't make it happen. And I think also, this, if there's, I firmly believe in there being soccer gods, because boy, were they on our side last night with Giles Barnes ringing one off the post in like the 85th minute.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think those are the two big things that sort of stand out for me. It's just that overall the league is getting much better. There's some exciting youth players coming through as well. It's not just all about, you know, as exciting as somebody like Bastian Schweinsteiger is coming to the league. It's more exciting for me to see somebody like David Akam, who's really coming into his own as a, I know he's not a youth player anymore, but like a younger MLS talent.
Mm.
I don't know. What about you? What stood out to you this season?
Well, I think, first of all, Atlanta, both of the teams have been, I think, successful to a certain degree in terms of drawing fans at the very least. Atlanta, of course, very successful.
You mean the two expansion clubs?
The two expansion teams, yeah. Yes. And I think that the approach has been interesting by Atlanta. I think that they're, the players they chose to sign, like Brad Guzan, shows a kind of a different approach than Orlando's Kaká method.
Yeah.
Which
is buy one player and hope for the best.
Yes. Lump it to Kaká. Seems like a fine enough business strategy.
Yeah.
But their attendance has been huge in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've climbed into a playoff spot recently is going to be good for retaining that. I have no idea how they're going, even though they're averaging in the 40s right now, I have no idea how they're going to fill that huge stadium, the Atlanta Falcons stadium that they're going to be moving into.
Yeah.
It looks horrendous.
And it looks fantastic. I can't wait to see games there when it's finished or see what the games look like and feel like for people. But one can only assume it means that they've signaled their intent to spend a lot of money, even in their first year, that they're potentially going to try to bring in one, maybe even two, really high-profile DPs to fill that massive stadium.
There was a time when teams were not able to seal their expansion bids. Teams were really being held over the barrel to build their own soccer-specific stadiums.
Yeah.
And that time seems to be over. Do you think that that is a positive, or do you think there's a possibility that I feel like years down the road we might be in another scenario where teams are going to have to move out of arenas like that? The Whitecaps arena is fine, but it seems like we could be in a different part of the cycle soon, where teams will have to. You'll notice that enough teams are in outside stadiums that there's going to have to be a big movement to move them back again.
That's a good question. I mean, my worry would be more that we'd go towards, that we'd be moving towards what most of European soccer looks like, where it really is four clubs in every major league that dominate things simply because they have the most money. Now, I know MLS's structure is set up to hopefully try to avoid that and have more parity. That, to me, is one of the things that I love about the league. When you look at the West right now and there's, you know, 6 points between first and, I think, eighth place, maybe it's 7 points, but that, to me, keeps it exciting and feels like a fan of any team, like your team is always in it. I think the playoff structure, although unusual, also helps with that, you know, you can be consistent, you can win the Supporter Shield and still get knocked out in the first round of playoffs. Like, you've still got to show up for those big games. Mm-hmm. I don't know, to be honest. I think it's really going to be interesting to see who the expansion sides are coming in, and I think that may start setting the tone a little bit more. It looks like Miami is on track to get their team. Obviously, we've got LAFC joining, which seems like they're ready to just spend a boatload of money on absolutely everything to make it a really high-profile club. And that's going to put pressure on LA Galaxy. That's going to put pressure on everyone, I think, to not sort of get relegated to the sidelines and invest. That being said, when you look at like the amount of money and time that the Whitecaps just recently invested in opening up their new training facility, I think things like that are things that are often overlooked that are not seen as big of investments. But I bike past that facility every day, mostly just I change my bike route so that I can go past it every day. But it really is remarkable. I mean, it is a European level soccer training facility that has absolutely everything, and it's going to matter so much when we're already seeing the results of the academy system. You know, everybody talks about Alphonso Davies right now. I'm more excited to see who are the players that are going to be coming through next year, the players that are going to be coming through in the next 3 to 5 years, where there's a real possibility that in 5 years, a lot of MLS teams that have set up their structures this way are going to have teams that could be composed of a third or maybe even half of a team that's homegrown. That's never been a possibility in MLS before, as far as I know. So, you know, there's going to be pressure put on teams in different ways. But despite the spending, I think teams that have set themselves up with a really good academy system are going to reap the benefits of those over teams that get caught in a cycle of having to constantly spend really big money to bring in high-caliber players in a world market that, let's face it, is going absolutely crazy. And it's so much harder to find good value for money in players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if that began to answer your question, but...
Well, I mean, that just makes me think of... I think the most unlikely signing to be a success is Schweinsteiger so far, because Schweinsteiger was having such a rough time at Manchester United before he came over.
Yeah.
And not only has he succeeded as... Not only has he succeeded, but he hasn't succeeded in the David Villa way of this is a player with a lot of quality, and when you put him in a situation, he can score goals.
Yeah.
I think he's also been great in support of the other players in Chicago that have been, I think, able to step it up to another level because they're receiving top quality service.
Yeah.
But it's funny... It's just funny to see this sort of turnaround, because I really think it could have gone sideways because of mm-hmm. how out of form he was.
Yeah. Well, and he really did struggle at first. I mean, he's a world-class player. So on his worst day, he's still going to be one of the better players in MLS. We know that. We also know he's reasonably fit, but he is your sort of classic MLS retiree, right? Like, he's come over from Europe in his sunset years to just kind of kick a ball around. At least that was his expectation, and I think very quickly kind of realized that's getting harder to do because MLS is an incredibly physical league. Even when you watch Premier League games, you know, yeah, there's some good scrappy English teams, but the amount of physical knocking around that happens in MLS, despite, yes, all the cards and all the calls, if you're not fully 100% fit, and also that players will show respect to you, but as you know, as we saw yesterday with Vancouver against Orlando, and you've got rookie Jake Nowinski up against Kaká, he's not pulling his punches. And, you know, beat him on a few times. And I think that's the thing, right? So to answer your question, or so respond to your comment, I think Schweinsteiger's done a lot for Chicago of just like a boost of positivity to the whole team and to the franchise that they really needed. I think that has actually had more effect than him just on the field. Yesterday they lost somehow to Colorado, but you saw like he was actually trying to get the crowd going too. He's trying to revive this club, and I think he's beginning to see that that is as effective as anything he can do on the pitch, is really... is get people rallied around the club and try to rebuild this thing.
Yeah, I think that the single season, the difference between the beginning of the season before he showed up in terms of interest, in terms of profile, has really changed and turned around, which is very, very positive for them. Rough year for Colorado. It sucks. Tim Howard seems to be doing his best down there. But They are now Minnesota has unmoored itself from the bottom of the table.
Yeah.
And now Colorado is the rough time of it that they've been having could earn them the wooden spoon.
Is that what's given out?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's called, it's like, there's like a name for it.
Really?
There's a name. Yeah, there's a name for what you give to the bottom. Oh. It might, unless it's the
it
toilet
should probably
seat.
Just be more that. Allocation money.
Maybe that's what the spoon is for. You are dolloping the allocation money in.
Okay, so maybe this is a good chance to go through the table and just talk about each team as a quick review. We won't go into huge details about every single team. Obviously, we're going to highlight Canadian teams a little bit more, mm-hmm. but there's only three. I was thinking bottom to top, starting in the West.
All right.
Does that make sense?
Sounds good.
Do you got your notes?
Sure do.
Good. Okay. So while we're on the topic of Colorado, then, who is currently sitting at the very bottom of the Western Conference with 22 points, mm-hmm. only 6 wins. However, one of them came yesterday against Chicago. I watched the game.
Mm-hmm.
Not overly impressive. Wait, was it Colorado that played them yesterday?
Let me look.
Sorry, I'm just having a feeling like I've got my... No, Colorado played Real Salt Lake and lost.
And lost 4-1.
Who beat Chicago?
Minnesota.
Sorry, I was getting my right. teams mixed up.
Yes, and that's what probably allowed them to leapfrog Colorado, is that they've now got their...
Yeah.
They've got their win.
It's still early in the morning. I literally just watched Colorado versus Real Salt Lake while I was waiting for you to get ready. So Colorado's, you're right, like Tim Howard, he's got to be feeling pretty rough. I mean, he's come back, he obviously cares about this club, and despite there being a few bright points in Colorado, you know, one of them is being Hairston, who, although he's inconsistent, there's clearly talent there as a young defender, but the play is so sloppy, they really have nothing in the midfield to string things together. I think as we sort of chatted about briefly a couple weeks ago, you know, all of the teams that are at the bottom are not just bad teams, but they're just not structured in a way that's allowing them to win. And with Colorado, you really just see that, you know, despite them getting a goal, and it was a good goal against RSL, they seem to lack heart. They seem to lack any sort of real idea about how to win a game. They don't seem to have a plan coming in. Their plan basically just seems to be essentially just line up 4-4-2 and play simply and hope for the best, which, given their position, is maybe not the worst idea. But they're flat. As a fan, I'd be frustrated as hell because they're boring to watch. And they also, quite frankly, at times just seem like they're not really trying. Like, they're stuck in first gear, and players like Gashi, who used to be, you know, a really good player, just seems to run out of gas, run out of ideas, and yeah, I mean, I think they deserve to be where they are.
The firing of Pablo Mastroianni, I think, earlier this month, because of... I know that when results are poor, you have to consider holding the manager accountable,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think it's coincided with an uptick...
No.
In results, I don't think it's helped them. And I, other than just trying to send a message to the fans who may be displeased by this, it seems like a strange move to make for me.
Yeah, and especially given, you know, the transfer window just closed, they really didn't make any movement. If this club really wanted to signal some intent to change their season around, and, you know, maybe not make the playoffs, that seems pretty far off now, but at least string together some results and go, hey, we're not throwing in the towel here for this season, is not even spend a bunch of money on a DP or anything like that, but just bring in something to shore up the defense or bring some creativity to midfield. Now, I know that the way the summer transfer window works, you don't have a lot of options and you really have to be pretty strategic and you're battling against other teams. But the fact that they made no major moves besides firing their head coach to me just seems like really, like there's desperation even amongst the, at the admin level of the team. Like, we're not really sure how we're going to turn this season around, but we're going to get rid of the head coach and hope that does the trick. Mm-hmm. Without any real idea of replacement, or so what's the catalyst then for change?
It's important that we be seen doing something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're going to respond to the fans and fire the coach, which sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. Speaking of, that brings us to LA Galaxy, everybody's favorite team to hate. So our good buddy, former Seattle coach, is back there with the club. Ziggy Schmid. Who I have to hate because of his time with the Sounders, but I do respect him a lot as a coach. And I thought he was sort of hard done by when he was taken out of Seattle. Obviously, it was the catalyst for change they needed. Has it been the catalyst for change with LA?
You mentioned earlier teams that are locked in a pattern of having to spend and spend and spend in order to... in order to like maintain a certain level. And I think that has been an issue with LA because they, once Robbie Keane left at the beginning of the season, they have had trouble filling that role. I thought that was, the Ziggy recently said, I was reading on the team news on MLSsoccer.com, that the team lacks a center forward. Which is really rough for the center forward they do have, Yossi Zardes, who is out there trying to do good, but has not had an impact so far.
No, and in a few words, that sort of sums up their season. It's just very little impact. Mm-hmm. It's almost remarkable too that you look at their results, where they're sitting at the table, second from the bottom, and then you look at their team roster sheet and you go, like, this is a good team. They certainly don't lack talent, big names, creative players. If I'm Ziggy Schmidt, I'm wondering what to do with this team also, because I'm sure he has a plan. But, with the recent sort of sudden move of Gilles Van Damme back to Belgium, which you sort of... I honestly feel like, who knows what's going on? He left for personal reasons, but I think he just went like, you know what, it's probably my last or second to last year of playing soccer. Clearly nothing's going to happen with the Galaxy, so I'm out, and go back to Europe and hopefully maybe begin talk with the European side and see it out with a team that I see a future with. And as much as Gilles Van Damme was a just total thug on the field and I really didn't like his style of play, which was basically go out and break some knees, he was a center back that produced results and a lot of cards, but the sort of the spine of LA's defense and that imposing figure is gone. I don't see it turning around for LA this season.
What a way to signal a write-off of a year for a team than the captain being like, I would rather be anywhere else, and the team being fun.
Yeah. No, when your team captain just like basically quits 2/3 of the way through the season, it's sort of the perfect metaphor for how it's gone for LA. I think that, Ziggy Schmidt's probably talked with the upper CEOs at LA Galaxy, and they all know that they're not going to make the playoffs. It's just Ziggy's looking to see who are the players he's going to keep. I feel at this point, the players are playing for their positions and their role in the team next year, and that's about it, which unfortunately is not that great of a motivation, and I don't think it's going to get them a lot of results, but I think we can probably expect to see LA Galaxy really clearing house in the off season, which seems like their off season is going to begin pretty quickly.
That's true. How have you been feeling about Minnesota?
I was excited to see them come in, another team that expansion side that has a lot of support. I don't think you could talk about Minnesota and their first season in MLS without talking about their fans, because boy, did they have a rough couple of first months. And it didn't seem to quiet down the fans. The fans have been showing up and they're loud. You know, it's you see some of the big clubs, the established clubs in MLS, who struggle to bring in 15,000 fans. And then they're just sort of sat there quite quietly. And then you look at Minnesota, which from day one had some brutal, brutal just slaughterings at home in front of the home fans. And they just have taken it in stride and rallied behind the team. So that's excellent to see. That being said, if your number one thing to say about Minnesota is their fans, then they've struggled on the pitch. That being said, last night, and this is where I got confused, is they were the ones that held on to a victory in Chicago and won 2-1. And I only watched the sort of condensed play of it, but you see that the players that they brought in, they're starting to tick, they're starting to build some chemistry. It wasn't just Chicago not playing that well. Minnesota really did take their chances, seemed to have a solid game plan, and, you know, it's not inconceivable that they might creep across the line. It's very unlikely they'll make it to the playoffs. But they're starting to put together a team that makes sense. It's not a write-off by any chance. I think they'll still lose some games. Kevin Molino seems to finally have kind of figured out what he needs to do for the team. Dunlady, I think, was the one that got the two goals in Chicago, has really turned on. Like, you know, if they've given, it's a team that's given up a lot of goals, but if I'm the head coach or anybody on that team right now, I think you've got to feel pretty positively about the way that things are headed, even if it's not the postseason. What do you think?
I had what happened to Christian Ramirez? Because I had him down as somebody who's had a good year, but he was not in the lineup. Was he injured?
I don't know. That's a good point. He wasn't there, was he?
Could you like to see... I do think... Yeah, there's kind of an injury concern. I see an article at the beginning of this month.
Yeah, you like to see erring on the side of caution with him.
You like to see a player from the NESL find success in MLS.
Yeah.
It's always the... It's so important that there is a second tier. In Minnesota, it was successful down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason why it's so important for that level to exist is because there are players like that that can find success once somebody does take a chance on them or once they're able to make their way to the top flight.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's the perfect point to make about Minnesota. They've taken a very different approach than Atlanta has. And, okay, maybe it hasn't turned out exactly as well for them as it has for Atlanta. I think they took the right approach for an expansion side, which is build a solid foundation, find players that care and are invested in being at the club and keep them there, find a system that works for you, but don't, you know, blow all your money on a couple of big signings that is not necessarily going to yield results for you. I mean, overall, yeah, the teams that spend a lot of money, they tend to do a little bit better. But, you know, Orlando City is sitting in ninth place in the Eastern Conference. And when you look at the amount of money they've spent on big-name players compared to Minnesota, I mean, I don't have the actual figures in front of me of which team spent more money. I would guess it's probably Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. As an Orlando or as a Minnesota fan, I'm probably going, okay, you know, I'll renew my season tickets for next year. We'll see what happens.
I think since the since Seattle came in with the year they had when they entered the league in 2010, that kind of becomes the model in a certain sense, or at least something, a goal people wonder about. Like, is this team also going to come in and barnstorm in their first year?
Yeah.
But having a more measured approach that thinks about, well, we're going to be here for 5-10, hopefully into the 5 or 10 years, hopefully into the foreseeable future, I think will create more sustainable growth.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally respectable season, despite giving up, like, what is it, 12 goals in their first three games or something. They're building something.
You can always count on Colorado to be worse this
year. Yeah. Okay, and LA Galaxy apparently as well. San Jose, I feel like this one can be kind of short. They've been terrible. They lack creativity. They really don't have much going forward. Wondolowski is great, and he's had a pretty rough season. The games I've seen of theirs, it's like watching paint dry. Even when they've cranked out results, it's slow, it's bogged down. Again, really lacking creativity. I'm kind of surprised that they've got 33 points and are sitting in 8th place, because the way that they play, the way that they look like Colorado. It's just disjointed.
Well, I think they've had a really tough time defensively.
Yeah.
And I'm taking a look right now at their home and away records, which are 7-1-5 at home and then 2-10-1.
Yeah. With 44 goals conceded as well this season. Which, however, that is the same as Portland, who's sitting in second place. So it's not everything, but then you have to be able to score goals, and they've only scored 28.
I feel like when I think of Wondolowski, I think of this strange, like, obviously he's such a good goal scorer, but his career has been wrapped up in this this weirdness where his appearances for the U.S. men's national team have not always been as successful. Like, he's kind of the star that wasn't, almost, in a way.
Like, yeah, he's to me the emblem of MLS potential unrealized. Like, even as an MLS star, his day has really kind of come and gone. And, you know, it's not a great comparison, but you look at the Clint Dempseys of the league that really... This is a guy who should be approaching the twilight of his year, but he's playing like he's in his prime. You know, I have to back up Wondolowski a little bit, that San Jose lacks so little creativity and service in midfield that I think Wando's got a hell of a job to do up top.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to create things and make things happen. But San Jose's a weird team. Again, you look at the team sheet, and guys like Salinas, who last season seemed to have a really great season, just aren't producing this year, and it's just not happening for them. And again, a team that made no major moves in the transfer window, don't really seem to have a plan of how to climb up the table. They're just trying to grind out results, which, who knows, it could happen, but boring, in a word.
I'm looking at Salt Lake.
Yeah.
They, speaking of no plan, they fired their head coach just before the season and then picked up 5 wins in 4 months.
Yeah.
Do you think, they seem to have turned it around a little bit, do you think that they will be able to climb their way into the playoffs?
It's hard to say. They've definitely had a slow build. Their regulars have not been that great this season. I mean, Medusa is always going to be sort of pretty good. João Plata's what he is. He's had a remarkably slow start to the season, but he's got a few goals now in the last few games. A team that seems to have had a really tough go of it. However, having just watched them, granted they're playing Colorado, but really seem to start to be putting together a bit of a game plan. We've got a fantastic coach who's really worked with the team this season, despite him being an animated, sort of unusual guy. He seems like he has a plan. You know, I think he's got good squad rotation as well. Yeah, RSL, they've been kind of a non-starter up to this point, but they're climbing the table. So although they may have not been the most exciting or consistent, and they've also... They've given up a lot of goals in the Western Conference, second only to Minnesota. But now the goals are starting to rack up. And they're a team that I see, if they can squeak into the playoffs, they're the kind of team that could really surprise people and come from behind and take out some of the teams that have had much better seasons than them, simply because they are a quick team, they've got great counterattack, and they can score goals.
I think you start to see with RSL the flatness of the table in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
In that there's 6 points between RSL and Seattle, and I feel like that's so weird that teams could really slip in and out of the playoffs as we approach October, depending on how their form is.
Yeah, and on a match to match basis, right? It's like there's like four teams that move after every game day in the Western Conference, which is remarkably frustrating as a fan, but I think it is great for the league that, you know, okay, LA and Colorado are probably out, but it's not inconceivable that RSL, San Jose, and Minnesota do squeak in, depending on results, and it's all about consistency at this point for teams.
I feel like Dallas is firing on a little bit of a on higher cylinders right now.
Yeah, they're it's weird. I think in the past seasons we've seen them very quickly take the number one spot or the number two spot and then stay there, and it's results early on that have secured them a playoff spot, even though their mid-season and late season form is not always the greatest. And this season they've been struggling to really put together much of a tear. But their team, again, once they click into that higher gear, I think will, I don't know, they're above the line right now. I see them staying there and probably ending up a little bit higher. They've got great quality again. Another very fast team.
Matthew Rudy is super impressive.
Yeah, and he did not have a bright start to the season, but he seems to have found his form again, and he's just, you know, he brings something a little different from other teams, which is that he's a fast forward. He's not the biggest guy, but he's also creative. He'll also set up goals, and his movement is excellent. His vision is excellent. We know Dallas is a good team. The results don't quite show it this year, but they haven't given up that many goals. They've been pretty solid defensively. I think it's more a case of they've just really struggled to find the wins, but them grinding out draws and putting in decent enough performances are why they're sitting mid-table. But I feel like they're going to climb because they are in form right now. But they've got to keep that form.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they were, like Vancouver, they were also a team that went deep in the CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah.
In its final year of its strange multi-season configuration.
Yeah.
Do you think that that has had a negative effect on them? Because of the rougher start to the year that they had.
It's a good question. I mean, I think that's always something that people are going to point to is that all MLS teams seem to really play a lot of other games, whether it's the U.S. Open Cup or the Canadian Championship or CONCACAF. I think it helps teams. Yeah, you risk injuries, but I think it helps focus teams. And you know, Dallas has gone far in it a number of times. I think it helps gel the team. It also helps you get a look at other players who, you know you may not be going further in CONCACAF, so you put out some younger players and see what they're about. Yeah, you run the risk of some injuries, but I don't know that their current form is a result of that CONCACAF run, but I think it does help teams. I think anytime you can get more games in and see what your players are about, yes, it's hard. Yes, the travel's hard. But you, as a coach, you get to see what your players are about. You get to see the ones that are going to have the stamina to play 3 games a week. You see the ones that aren't. You get to take a longer look at some of your players who might only be getting 15 minutes as a sub every couple of weeks. In things like CONCACAF, you can play them for 60 or 70 minutes and get a better look at them. It doesn't seem to have hurt them. Like, it might have, at the time, sort of dividing their focus, and I think both Dallas and Vancouver really did make an honest run in the CONCACAF. They put out their best sides to try to get further, and it didn't work out for them. But, yeah, I mean, 36 points, 6th place, they're on a hot streak, doesn't seem to have really hurt them too much.
Mm-hmm. Houston.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Houston? Do I even have? This is another team like San Jose that has been undefeated. That has been garbage on the road, but good at home. They're undefeated. They were undefeated. I don't know if they still are.
Yeah.
And I think that they have a coach in Wilmer Cabrera that has had a great first year.
Oh yeah, he's done fantastic things for the club. Yeah, they've struggled with consistency, but they've got some fantastic forward players. I think they're one of the fastest forward teams in the league that can just absolutely punish you on the counter. And that being said, yes, it leaves them vulnerable at the back at times, and there's teams like Vancouver that can figure that out who are also good on the counter. But, you know, 46 goals, that's a pretty impressive showing. The fact that they're sitting fifth probably doesn't show how good they are. But, again, a reminder that at 38 points, they're only 3 points behind Seattle Sounders for first place. I feel like Houston's place in the playoffs, despite the fact that they're only sitting fifth, is pretty much secured just because of the way they've played. You're right, the away results are not great, but just they are, for me, one of the more fun teams to watch.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that they've, I have down here that they have had a really strong year defensively, and that Leonardo and AJ De La Garza have been very good.
Yeah.
Do you think that that will hold them in good stead when it comes to a potential playoff matchup, especially if, oh, they'd be playing the Whitecaps right now, I guess.
Yeah. I think it might. Where they'll struggle is against a very strong Eastern Conference side this year. The Eastern Conference teams that are going to make it through the rounds of the playoffs are very strong offensively and have really solid defenses. And right now, Houston's really going to have to start locking the back door if they're going to get far in the playoffs. But for me, they're a team that you go, they need to tidy some things up, but they've got the right idea. And it's entirely conceivable they go on a bit of a playoff run. I don't see them winning it, but I think they'll go through second round.
They beat, one team they did not beat was Vancouver.
Indeed. Which was kind of surprising, because as a fan, I was ready to let that one go, or maybe only get a point out of it. Vancouver. Dear Vancouver. You glorious inconsistent. The funny thing is, for a team that has such a reputation as being inconsistent, this is probably one of their most consistent seasons in just not losing a lot of games.
Yeah, I think that it was kind of a rough start, because I think now that Jordy Reyna has come back,
yeah,
and there have been a few additions and changes to sort of change up the mix a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was, of course, shocked when Kakuta Mane was traded to Columbus for Tony Chaney, but
yeah.
I think that Tony has found his place in the lineup.
Yep. Well, till the red card, but yeah.
Yeah, I guess now also found his place in the press box for the next game.
Yeah, he's found his place, though. I mean, it's going to be hard not to just go through player by player, but I'll just try to like pick a couple of highlights. Tony Chaney's got the highest passing accuracy in the Whitecaps. And for a team that in the last two games has had only 28% possession, including a game at home, they desperately need that. And that's something Chaney brings that, you know, despite my personal just wanting to keep Kakuta Mane around, the trade makes more and more sense the longer the season goes on, and also a player that I think needed a change of scenery, and we can talk about that when we get to Columbus. Yeah, the Whitecaps have been interesting this season. I think they made some great summer transfer moves to shift things around a little bit. I was a little bit surprised at some of the players who stayed, but I think, you know, getting our first look at Aaron Mond yesterday couple of mistakes, but, you know, he was a starter at RSL. He won Defender of the Year in 2015, I think. You see what he's about. He's calm, which I think is helpful in the back line. I still think there's times where Kendall Waston and Tim Parker are a little bit too much of the same thing. And if one panics, then the other one panics, and then it's just them clearing balls out of the box. That's going to hurt them, I think. Even if they make it through the play into the playoffs, I think it will be just. And defensively, they've just been a little bit too shaky this season. Jordan Harvey, overall, when you look at the whole season, he's as consistent as ever, but there's been games where he just looks thoroughly outgassed by whoever's running at him. I would say arguably right now, at least in terms of form, their best defender is Kendall Waston, but Jake Nowinski has really pushed and, you know, I think could be a big difference maker. I know that might sound a little odd because people think of him as a little bit more of an attacking fullback, but, you know, watching him close down Kaká last night, you go, the kid can play. And right back was something they really struggled with last season after Betashore left to Toronto. I don't know. I think I'm too close to the Whitecaps to know where they end up or how things go. What do you think?
I think that the one thing that they have always needed to fix that I think is starting to get better is this tendency to send a single player to the moon on a rocket on the front line and be shocked that there are no goals.
Yeah.
I think that there is now a better sense of group movement. I think that players are starting to click. You have players that are able to be in that service role, and that has been positive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been, I have a problem with any fan of any team that just goes, we need to sign a striker. I don't think the striker's actually been our main problem. When you look at Rivero's season last year, yeah, he struggled, but he also struggled because he was having to hold up the ball because nobody else could, and then he'd have nobody to pass it to because nobody else was making the run forward. And that has been consistent with just about every striker who's come through our system since He Who Shall Not Be Named. And now we're finally seeing, with some midfield creativity, Jordi Reyna is the creative midfielder that we've been desperately missing. Bolaños at times has served as that, but he still seems to be most effective on the wing. You know, with Reyna in the mix and a fully fit squad, I think that they'll see themselves across the playoff line. How far they'll go, I think, is just going to depend on full, like, that old Whitecaps resilience of just grinding out results. But defensively, they've been one of the stronger teams recently. And that's going to help them out.
I'm curious about how matchups are going to play out. One team I think that it's hard to predict how they'll do is Sporting KC.
Yeah.
Who part of the reason why they're in this logjam at the top of the table is their 10 draws.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at the table and you look at how few goals they've conceded, you'd be like, wow. They must have just won a lot of games. How are they only in third place? But 10 draws. They've great defensive team. They do have the best defensive lineup in the league. They've conceded the fewest goals by a lot. Mm-hmm. It looks like by 12 at least. 19 goals allowed for the season. However, only 31 goals scored.
Yeah,
and
that's
the... With the recent departure of Dom Dwyer as well to Orlando, you wonder how much they're going to be able to create going forward.
And that's going to be an issue when you look at... That's the thing, is it be having a great defense will allow you to grind out results and stake out a great place in the table.
Yeah.
But if you can't find ways to win games,
yeah,
there's not much you can do with that.
Yeah, and again, when you look at the two teams who are sitting above them in the West, Seattle and Portland, and then you look at the top teams in the East, those are teams that can sit for 80 minutes very comfortably without any goals and then just flatten you in the last 10 or 15 minutes. And so I see them if they're matched up against Toronto, New York City. Well, New York City FC is definitely capable of giving up goals, but Columbus can grind out results. Seattle and Portland, very happy to wait 80 minutes before scoring, and they have strong benches as well. So, yeah, if Sporting KC is going to make a playoff run, they're going to need to find some solutions to the goal drought fairly quickly. 31 goals on the season is not terrible, but it's in the West. They're, I think that's maybe fourth or fifth from the bottom in terms of goal scoring. And they haven't made any major moves in the summer. They've got a good core of a team. Again, fantastic team, fantastic coach, but the goals need to come.
I think one team that could be on the upswing, I had down that Portland's Diego Valeri has been doing well, but they need some of their other key players to either get back from injury, and Addy and Liam Ridgewell. And they also needed, I thought they needed Darlington Nagbe to do better, and he was able to score that game-winning goal against Colorado, which was great, if you haven't seen that finish.
I haven't seen the goal, but you, no, you're right. Nagby's always been such just a stalwart, consistent player for them. He's really struggled this year. That being said, our old buddy Darren Maddox has been able to come in a couple of times and score game winners. So, yeah, I mean, it's looking bright for them. They, if I'm recalling correctly, they did not have a good start to the season and seemed to really struggle. And they still seem to, at times, struggle with teams. I mean, this is the West, right? Like, they're second, and they've got 40 points, but they've given up 44 goals, and they have 9 losses. Not a great season, but here they are sitting in second. Mm-hmm. And seem to have some momentum on their side. It's too bad we're not doing this a little later, because they also play Seattle today, I believe.
Yeah. Ooh.
Which I think is going to be a fascinating game to begin to look at. Who's going to be the challenger in the West for the MLS Cup? Again, there are still the playoffs to get through. Anything can happen. But it's hard to talk about Portland without talking about Seattle. Diego Valeri's had a fantastic season. He always does, because he's a brilliant player. But yet, you're right. There needs to be, everybody else needs to step up now, and they need to really do something about their defense that's been very shaky. They have very few clean sheets this season, and we know they can give up goals. Portland, for me, is one of those teams that if they go through in the playoffs, they need to score 2 or 3 goals in a game to win it. They're not going to get a 1-0 or a 2-0 win, and they'll give up late goals.
It really feels to me so strange that last year, when you talk about the challengers for the MLS Cup,
yeah.
Both Seattle and Toronto seem to come out of nowhere relative to their league positioning. And this year they're both in the key positions in terms of being at the top of the table. So,
and maybe that means they both get knocked out in the first round this year. Maybe that's what happens. A little Cascadia karma.
This is the thing. And I had been chatting with you a little bit about this before, is that getting that first round bye in the knockout round didn't seem to help clubs last year.
No.
And I don't know if it's because, you know, you take your foot off the gas pedal and you lose some of your momentum or what, but
I think that is the case. I think that especially for teams that are in form, they want to keep playing, right? Like they want to, if they've been on a tear of wins, especially if they've just gotten above the line or just confirmed their place in the playoffs, that's kind of what I was saying before about the other games that happened, whether through that's the Canadian Championship or U.S. Open Cup, is it helps keep teams moving. And it's, if there's something consistent about MLS teams, it seems to be that when they get a bye week, they come back and they struggle. That it's like they get so used to playing so many games and traveling so far. If they get a week and a half, 2 weeks off, it's like everybody kind of switches off. And then all of a sudden you're in a playoff game, which means that you might have to travel 6,000 kilometers to go play a game and you haven't played in a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I think teams struggle with it.
Okay. That makes sense.
We're at the top. Seattle Sounders with 41 points. Not a lot separating them from the pack, but what are your thoughts on their season?
I think that we were discussing with Casey sort of how important it is to be able to win games, and there have been a couple good comebacks against I was sort of insulting Casey for their draws and now saying, oh, they got a draw. Seattle got a draw against Portland. But
Their
comebacks, the comebacks to sort of keep this undefeated streak alive have been very positive for them. And it it bodes well for their ability to hang on and maybe reach penalties again in knockout rounds.
Yeah. I think they're also a team that's really shown, they've come a long way in terms of showing that they have a lot of grit to them. They're not going to give up a game. We haven't seen a lot of points this season where Seattle has just capitulated. Which, yes, even though they made that dreamlike rise from the bottom last year to come back and just steal the whole thing, they've been fairly consistent this season. They've lost some games, but it hasn't seemed to have shaken them too much. They're scoring a lot of goals. They have tremendous talent up top. Lodero seems to have kind of dropped off a little bit. If they keep him in form and he gets better, I think there's no doubt they make a serious challenge for the final again. Defensively, they've been a little bit inconsistent, shown that they're vulnerable. They can and do give up goals, but they've got a really solid midfield, and their forwards, I mean, you sort of forget sometimes, depending on who starts, and then you remember that, like in Vancouver, oh yeah, and they've still got Clint Dempsey sitting on the bench. And while it may not be his personal preference to only play 20 minutes, he's proven he can be very effective as that super sub. And you've got the young kid, Jordan Morris, who's, I think, one of the most talented wingers in the league right now.
It's been a very exciting year.
It's been an exciting year, and I think Seattle has all the right ingredients. They've got the right idea. I think a little bit of luck will matter, but I see them going pretty far in the playoffs.
I think it's weird because you can't really start to think about matchups in the West because teams are sliding all around, so you can't really predict whether or not a team is going to be first or sixth.
Yeah.
I think that the way that teams play off each other matters a lot more in the Eastern Conference than will matter in the playoffs, because you have New York City, a team that seems like is firing all cylinders, but is can't find a way past Toronto.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you're going to see that play itself out again.
I believe so. I mean, I think that the conference system matters greatly, and people forget that. We can talk about how great Seattle's been, and I'm confident they'll probably be first in the West, if not, maybe second, but definitely first. I think they're better than all the teams, and they've been better informed than all the teams below them. However, at 41 points, it's fully conceivable that Real Salt Lake, if they continue to perform, and depending on other results, I don't think it will happen, but Seattle could potentially not make the playoffs if they suddenly collapse. That's how close the West is. I don't think it's likely, but it is conceivable that it could happen. So, and we know in MLS anything's possible.
Seeing a team be out of the playoffs, being two games back from the leader, is something you see in like a five team NBA division.
Yeah,
or one of the other sports that has the smaller divisions.
Yeah.
It's so weird to see it here.
Exactly. And, you know, and there's teams, it's starting to close now, but there's teams that still have games in hand over Seattle and Portland as well. So that could shake things up. The way this table looks now, we know could change drastically. Personally, I don't think it will, but we'll see.
Do you want to start at the top of the East? Because I feel like there are some bubbling TFC opinions.
Let's do that. Let's talk about. Have you gone to a lot of Toronto games?
I actually don't go to that many. The one that I got that I went to this year was the Canadian Championship game against Ottawa.
Right.
Which it was very rough having just been in Montreal to watch the Whitecaps Montreal Canadian Championship game, where the focus was not placed on the game. The score was commensurate.
Yeah.
To then go and watch TFC let Javinko just cut up a second division team.
Yeah.
Into little ribbons. Like.
Yeah. What was the end result in that game? 4-0?
Oh, it was like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk Toronto. Why don't you start? Because, I mean, if only for geographical closeness, but I also feel like you'll have a probably more nuanced approach to Toronto than I will.
Well, I got to see, although I did not attend many games, I've gotten to see a couple when I was working at the Star, and I think it is strange that they have been able to, from like I was saying about Seattle, be sort of a knockout round team last year, and this year it has all been about TFC in the East.
Yeah.
They have looked really good. The addition of Victor Vasquez has really helped. Not losing anyone as well has really helped. It's fundamentally the same team as last year with the addition of that extra player. I think that it's been... They've looked bulletproof, but when we were talking, you think that they can be beat.
Yeah. Well, and that they show that they can be beaten. That being said, they've only been beaten 3 times. You know, in some ways, this could be kind of short when you say they've got 52 goals for and 25 goals against. There's a goal difference of 27. That is...
Wow.
So, like, that's the highest team in the West is Sporting KC with a 12-goal difference. Now, all of that with a grain of salt, that Toronto is a fantastic team, top to bottom. They've really put together a strong team. As you said, they've kept that strong team from last year and just added to it. Victor Vasquez, to me, is the best midfielder in MLS right now in terms of his production rate. Plus, I like him because he gets me lots of fantasy points. He's been like the one player I've never traded this season. That being said, when you look at the East, they're... All the other teams are teams that concede a lot of goals, and there's not a lot of teams that are that defensively minded. Most of the teams in the East give up a lot of goals. Toronto will absolutely destroy you if you're not completely mentally turned on and defensively sound. The Western Conference, I think, is much more defensively sound than the East, so I see Toronto getting into it. Well, clearly they're going to make the playoffs. They're clearly going to win the Supporters' Shield. They're clearly going to go through the first round. Once they're against a Western Conference team, I think that's when things get exciting, as we saw last year. And it's entirely possible they end up against Seattle again. I think the sheer determination to win it could possibly see them over. I think Seattle can still beat them.
They've tried really hard to keep a lid when Seattle comes to town, to keep a lid on the emotions that stem from that MLS Cup final last year.
Yeah.
Which I did attend. It was such a strange game, and I don't really think
it
that...
It really was.
Both from the temperature, like playing these games in December... Especially when you consider the... do they take a full week for the knockout round? Because I think that they need to find a way to get these MLS Cup games earlier in the year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was bizarre on all fronts. Yeah, who knows? I mean, the thing about Toronto is it's so easy to just say it's the Giovinco show. Which it is a little bit. But they've got quality all over the park. I was really mad when the Whitecaps had potentially the opportunity to take Michael Bradley and he went to Toronto instead. He's a rock in center midfield. He's a player you hate to play against, but everybody wants him on your team because he can take chunks out of players, but he's also got vision. I mean, what else can you say about Toronto other than they've had a rock-solid season? My reason for hating them is because Giovinco, a lot of his production is from him lying down on the pitch. Because he hits the deck at the slightest contact. I think I would trust him as a personal chauffeur because he's great at shoulder checking. The number of games that you see, he's near the box, he looks over his shoulder, as soon as he feels that defender running in, he goes to ground. And then he wins the free kick and he puts them away. It's part of the game, but I think he's a cheap player sometimes. And we've also seen that not work, where once you get to the playoffs, if that's his main tactic, is hitting the deck to win a free kick, especially with video assistants coming into the mix of things, I think he's got to stay on his feet and try to do what he does best, which is run at defenders and just pull off some brilliant goals. In the last few games, it seems like when they run out of ideas, it's just get the ball to Giovinco, he checks over his shoulder and he falls over. It's been working, but it's frustrating as hell to watch as a fan.
I think a problem, as much as he's been successful, he's not the top. When I checked last, he was not the top scorer. He might be now. As much as he can be the talisman of the team, what I think we saw last year in the MLS Cup was that when he doesn't click, when he gets frustrated, when he thinks the referees are against them, he can start to fall out of sync with the team, and that really impacts TFC's performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as I say this criticism against him, I also fully recognize he's a phenomenal talent, and Toronto is very lucky to have him and lucky to keep him. But you're right, and he's also struggled in open play sometimes. With the set pieces, we know he's going to be brilliant and really produce some moments of magic. He's the kind of quality player that will still produce some major moments of magic in open play. But as you said, a team like Seattle can shut him down and he'll get frustrated. And that means that even as a penalty taker, if it goes to it, he could miss. And you just never quite know what's going to happen with him. That being said, Toronto also has some very fine substitutes that they could play. If after 60 minutes, 70 minutes, it's not happening for Giovinco, they've got players that they can... They've got two good options for him.
People don't often talk about how good Jozy Altidore is. Mm-hmm. Or just because Giovinco is such a huge league star.
Yeah.
In stretches where he's been injured, Altidore has really been able to step up and take a leadership role, which has been cool.
And sadly, well, maybe not sadly, I think he's playing some of the best soccer of his career at Toronto. He's been an inconsistent, frustrating player for just about every team he's ever played for, and he seems to have finally found a bit of consistency at Toronto. He's stayed fit for the most part. He's avoided major long stretches of being away from injury. And that big, imposing, straightforward forward is something that not a lot of MLS teams have. It's what everybody wants, but he's proven that, you know, it pays sometimes to just have a big tall guy up front who can put a boot through it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's got the accuracy for it. The other thing is too, that I think people don't pay enough attention to, is a guy like Edwards, who's young, but who's, when he's had his moments, he's taken them. And so it's highly unlikely he's going to be a starting forward for Toronto in the playoffs, but if they needed him to, he could. And that, to me, is what makes Toronto also such a strong team, is as much as it's the Giovinco show, they've proven they can be the same team without him. That's a dangerous team. When you can play without Altidore and Giovinco and get wins, like, for me, they're going through to the final. If they don't, it'll only be their fault.
The money helps.
The money helps. The massive, massive amounts of money they pave their team helps. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of money and expensive players.
Does New York City FC have a lot of money?
Well, they got, I don't know the rest of the team is, if they have that sort of stocked cupboard that TFC has got, but they must be paying Dinah Villa a lot.
It's unfortunate that they have to play on a baseball field, but they're... Oh, New York City FC. I mean, what can you say beyond... they, to me, are one of those sort of slippery, tricky Eastern Conference teams, and I think their place in the league is a result of a little bit more grit than they've had in the last couple of years. David Villa has helped. They've scored a lot of goals. That has helped. They've not given up as many goals, I think, as they have in past seasons. Their defense has looked a little bit better. But to me, there's still an expansion side that has all their money in attacking players. And although their form has been okay, they've still lost 7 games this season, which is, you know, it's not terrible, but it shows that they can be beaten and will be beaten. If Vancouver Whitecaps can beat New York City FC, I mean, David Villa is capable of producing moments of magic, but like Giovinco, can also easily get frustrated. And that's what we saw when they played Vancouver, is that you can shut David Villa down. He's not going to run his heart out every single game. He only needs a minute to produce some magic. But if you close him down, you can beat New York City FC. They're a very beatable team. They've been much, much better. They've got some excellent young players who are coming through the ranks. But, you know, to me, they're still not a very fun team to watch. And they've been grinding up results, but who knows what's going to happen if and when. Well, I'm assuming they'll make it through the playoffs, but...
I think we're heading to possibly another year like last year where they don't necessarily achieve anything of significance in the playoffs, but David Villa wins the MVP trophy anyway.
Yeah.
I think that you make a good point about the fact that they're still so young into their history as a club that you wonder what the sort of LA Galaxy was able to, after the Beckham years, kind of build another core after that, or after like the team that was built up around David Beckham sort of dissipated a little bit. And you wonder what the second act for NYC will be.
You really do. And, you know, if it's me, I go, you take some of that David Villa money, you invest in a really strong center back, a really strong center defensive mid, and you get a younger, you know, maybe 25, 26, okay forward. And then you see a little bit more consistency and try to build a spine of a team rather than build everything around a DP. However, in the East, we've seen it work. Like, it's not an insane thing to try. That being said, it's worked very differently for New York City FC this year than it has from Orlando. And I think that the younger players and some of the kind of more unmentioned players in New York City are the ones to actually thank for where they are on the table, is that the rest of the team has stepped up a little bit more. Is it Ring who's the young kid, or is it Harrison I'm thinking of?
Harrison is ringing a bell, but I'm not sure.
Anyway, they have a young kid who's been, I think he's played both as a mid and as a winger for them, and he's been really great. And I apologize to him for not knowing his name, but I don't watch that many New York City games.
One thing I got totally wrong last week when I was talking to you is that I said that Columbus was not impressing me and could easily fall out of the playoffs, and now they're third.
I think they heard you.
How are you feeling about Columbus?
Well, yeah, their form has been all over the place. They've been terribly inconsistent. I think they're one of those teams that has great potential. Again, a great team sheet when you look at the guys. I mean, Higuain, Justin Merrim, Afoul, like, they've got great players on their team. They've given up a lot of goals. Their goal difference is zero. They've scored 42 and they've given up 42. So clearly we've got a bit of a defensive problem here.
Yes.
They need to address that. I think that they've tried to a little bit, and in recent weeks it's worked. But there again, they're a team that's got everything going forward, and you just never quite know with them which way it's going to come out. But they've also proven that Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but for me, when I watch Columbus play, although they've been inconsistent, they seem like a team that's actually having some fun. They seem very positive. If they go down a goal, they just sort of get on with it and try to win the game, and if they don't, it doesn't seem to affect them too much. That mentality could serve them really well in the playoffs, that it's just sort of a never-say-die thing, and they're just going to calmly build up again, try to get their best players on the ball, get a ball through. They've got pace down the wings. I think Kakuta Mane is out with an injury right now, but if he can get fit in the next couple of matches and help them out, he's been very effective for them after a bit of a slow start. Obviously, we both want to see the kid do well, but it's great to see him now finding his place in that squad and producing. And he might end up being a bit of a super sub for them like he was for us, but he's scoring the goals, and they've proven that even without Higuain, they can still get results. So overall, yeah, they've lost 12 games, they've given up a lot of goals, but they're third in the Eastern Conference because they seem to care, and they've put together a decent string of results recently.
When I was looking at them, I saw that once you get past Higuain, Merrim, and Ola Kamara, the scoring really drops off.
Yeah.
It's really all is three. Are three players that score a lot of goals enough, or do you think that they have a little bit of an issue with depth in scoring?
I think it all depends on the team that you have and what kind of style of play you have. I don't think that's going to keep the Columbus coach up at night that only three of his players are scoring a lot of goals. To me, I'd go three of my players are scoring a lot of goals. Right. A lot of teams have one player at best who's scoring a lot of goals. So, yeah, I mean, my personal preference is depth. You want your midfielders scoring goals. You want your defenders getting in and scoring some goals. But they're third because their system's working. And I think the most important thing for any team is that they find a system that works for them and then they stick to it.
One thing that I wanted to point out was their game on Wednesday with LA, which was the VAR apocalypse. There were at least from the highlights. I saw the highlights package. I didn't see the full game.
Yeah.
But it seemed to be really rough. Because I believe they're only supposed to review significant. I think there are like supposed to be limits on how plays can be reviewed.
Yeah.
But there was a review on a red card that didn't reverse it. There was a review that caught a missed penalty, and there was a review of an offside goal. So those are all key plays. But it just seemed like they were making the box with their hands a lot.
It was excessive.
Which is the referee's signal for a review.
The thing that I've noticed after watching, I've watched a lot of MLS games recently, basically since VAR's come in, I've watched at least 20 minutes of every match that's been played, or very close to. And the thing that I've seen is that commentators and fans really still don't seem to understand VAR and how it's used, and forget that they are checking every single play throughout the game, regardless of whether or not the first official asks for it. They're not going to get in the earpiece and say anything unless they see something that is clear and obvious. And I think that's what's tripping people up a little bit. However, the Columbus LA game, it just seemed to be that referees, look, naturally they're going to have an adjustment period to figure out when to sort of call for it. But it's really starting to separate the good referees from the bad ones that just can't seem to make up their minds and are perhaps, and this is what I think some people feared, is that they're now hesitating and they're wanting everything to be checked rather than paying attention and seeing the game. And that to me was an example where the first official was just not paying attention enough and should, it's always going to be his call over the video assistant review. He doesn't have to take the advice of VAR. If they say there's something obvious here, you should look at it, he doesn't have to. He can just say, no, what I saw goes. That's the way that it works. So for me, as an official, you just have to be a little bit more decisive in those calls. And that's been what the complaint against MLS refereeing has been this whole time, is consistency in calls. And so what's the point in having VAR if you're just going to then rely on it and you're going to stop watching the game? I mean, it's a tough job, but it's brutal. And both sides hate it, because then it does slow down the game. And it feels like, you know, Columbus deserved to win that game, but it was sort of questionable by the end of it because so many things had to be reviewed.
Mm. I also, one thing that, and I've talked to you about this before, the fact of bringing it in mid-season is so garbage to me. They make these big rule changes, and last year, I can't remember which changes were made. They made a couple of changes mid-season, but maybe I have no idea when they chose to make them. This year they planned a mid-season rule change. Ahead of the season, they were like, yeah, this is going to happen in the middle of the year. And that's so strange to me.
It's bizarre. I get wanting to test it out and get it in as soon as it's ready. But you're right. I mean, and now this thing about in the postseason, they're going to implement a fourth substitute, but only if you go to extra time. Like, it's just like... Why implement it then? Why can we not just wait till the beginning of a season? You can get all the coaches, all the referees together, explain everything. A lot of the coaches seem really unsure about VAR and how it's used. And, yeah, I agree. It's kind of garbage. I'm glad it's there. I've seen it already work a number of times. That being said, the Wednesday game for Columbus was a clear example of just like, okay, as a referee, you've got to be able to control a match and see plays and not rely on a system to do the work for you. It's difficult to always see, but yeah, it did feel excessive. I think part of it was sort of coincidence in that all the incidents were rather close together, so it just felt like the sort of middle to final third of the game was just like every 30 seconds a whistle went and somebody was miming and going upstairs, and you just wanted to be like, look, take the referee off, turn off the cameras, let them play the game, and let's just see this thing out. Like, let's just play the game.
I really prefer the system they use in the World Cup, which I think is the Hawkeye system from tennis, where you're using it not necessarily to change your judgment, but to see, like, to really focus on empirical things like, was the ball in or out, right? Yeah. Like, I like that system a little bit more.
Yeah, I think that's the intention with this, but I think some of the referees don't quite get that, right? Like, it's for penalties, straight red cards, mistaken identity, and what's the other one? Something else. But also, the rules say very clearly, it's clear and obvious mistakes. It's not meant to be... And I've seen a few referees already do it, where they make a penalty call, it's the right call, they don't review it. That happened actually Vancouver-Seattle midweek. As a fan, it looked to me like it was a garbage penalty call. The referee was certain. Of course, all the fans are doing the box gesturing thing and they want the review. You go back and you watch that, and that's Shannon Williams giving up a bad penalty. He definitely gets the player, not the ball. It's clear the referee saw it, made the right call. You don't review every single penalty or every single red card. You do it when there's the chance of a clear and obvious error.
Mm-hmm. We talked about Chicago a little bit.
Yeah, speaking of clear and obvious errors.
But what is going on with the New York Red Bulls? Because I feel like Bradley Wright Phillips has been fine.
Yeah.
Their keeper, Luis Robles, continues to be fine. But I don't think have been able to make an impact. They drew with New York City, and they don't have they don't really have purchase with Toronto either.
No, yeah, they are my least favorite team to watch. Well, second, we'll get to the worst ones at the bottom. But for a team of their caliber, they've just got to do better. They've been so inconsistent. Defensively, they've been okay. Going forward, they've been okay. But, you know, 12 wins and 10 losses kind of says it all to me, that they just can't really seem to find their form. They're trying to put far too much through Bradley Wright Phillips. and they just haven't found enough other players that can really support him and do some of the work. They're kind of riding high right now off of the sort of last-ditch effort to win against FC Cincinnati in the Open Cup in a sort of heartbreaking loss for Cincy. But they, for a lot of the time, really did look like true contenders against New York. And that's the thing that we've seen, is that the Red Bulls, when they're turned on, they look great, and they can just tear you to pieces and run right through you. They are a fast team, again, in transition. They like to keep the ball. That's always hard to play against for teams that like to counterattack. But they just, a lot of the times, they look flat, they look bored, they look out of ideas. They haven't brought in enough players that seem to have some creative spark. And the fact that Bradley Wright Phillips can do what he can do this late in his career is remarkable and a credit to him. But that seems to be all they've really got in their back pocket. And teams have figured that out. They're a very beatable team. I think they're a quite good team, but you know, I don't see them making much of a playoff run if they stay in it.
I was there in February for the CONCACAF Champions League game with Vancouver, and it's just like you say, there's this element of danger that can stay below the surface.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the potential's there, but it's also very possible to see it not realized and just see Wright Phillips running around, huffing and puffing, but really not get much. And I don't think that's necessarily his fault either.
I still can't believe they traded Dax McCarthy.
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher to me. Dax McCarthy, again, another fantastic midfielder. To give him up, not really get much out of it either. Did they trade him for anyone, or did they just get money?
I'm trying to remember. I think the idea was that they had other midfielders that they wanted to put in a more, like, they wanted to essentially change up the alignment.
Yeah.
To match that, I'm digging this out of my mind now, that 4-2-2 structure that the Red Bull teams are starting to favor.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I'll say about the Red Bulls that makes them somewhat interesting is Jesse Marsh, who I think is a fun and interesting guy, a great coach. And also this week called for promotion and relegation. Hot off the heels of playing FC Cincinnati, said that he thinks it would make clubs invest more in their overall structures. And I kind of had to agree, and I was a little bit surprised that as the coach of like a long-standing MLS giant and just a club that's sort of been there forever, that he would be in favor of that system. I thought was kind of surprising, but I thought, you know, like, credit to him.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's about the best I can say for the team.
I'm really curious about whether or not Montreal is going to make the playoffs.
You skipped one.
We talked about Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You did. But can I take 2 seconds and just say, Almiron, breakout player? Does he win MLS Newcomer of the Year?
I think so. I mean, I think that that's a story. I don't know if the voters are going to be looking for this necessarily, but it's a great story to highlight.
Yeah, yeah, especially with the recent international call-up as well. I think it's fantastic for him. Okay, Montreal, go.
Montreal, I talked to my friend Olivier Tremblay, works at Radio Canada, about whether or not he thought they were going to make the playoffs. He said yes, he thought they could kind of stick together. Ignacio Piatti has been very, very hot, but it seems like only at the Impact could this be a negative, because he's also very publicly talking about his contract, get paid. Everybody should get paid, but it doesn't do well for a team that is trying to. That has now slipped into seventh out of the playoffs and is trying to climb back into a good position, to be focusing on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Montreal, to me, is such an interesting team. I honestly don't follow them that much, which I think is just a result of them being a mid-level team in the Eastern Conference, is that if they're playing Philadelphia, I'm probably not going to spend 2 hours on a Sunday watching that.
Right.
But you're right. Piatti is an incredible player with great vision, and he's done fantastic things for Montreal. The contract thing and the fact that he is still susceptible to injury, everything's got to go through him. Montreal's a decent team. They've got other good players. We know that. But their defense has been pretty shaky at times this season. They're also a very beatable team. They like possession. That worked well for them last year in the playoffs, that they can control so much of the ball for such long spells that they'll just eventually get their chances. But the Piatti thing is kind of worrying. I mean, if he's out for even a game in the playoffs, you struggle to think how they are going to find a way through another team or remain defensively sound. One of the things that I really like about Montreal that I think is worth mentioning is just that they also have an academy system and have a lot of players from Quebec in their first team. And
yeah.
I really respect that they're a newer team, but they're actually trying to build a structure there to last. And and that means that they might have a bunch of seasons where they kind of end up just making it into the playoffs, or they just don't quite make it, but exciting to think about even in the next 3-4 years, the team that Montreal might be putting together. Anthony Jackson-Hamel to me is the perfect example of that. 24-year-old forward who's had, he's been inconsistent, but he's 24.
Yeah.
He's gotten some call-ups now to the men's national team. He's not looked out of place. And that's such a positive thing going forward. I think if you're a Montreal fan, even if they don't make it into the playoffs or they don't go far in the playoffs, you're excited about what could be, and that maybe they're looking forward to the years post-Piatti and can start looking to maybe bringing in a slightly less expensive option, but really highlight those players that are coming up through their system and really know the team and what they're trying to do.
Balu Tabla has a lot of promise. I was there in April to see some of the Whitecaps games, and he seems to be their kind of version of the Davey story almost, in a very young player that is managing to have an impact. I asked Olivier if he had any idea about a player that people don't pay enough attention to or may not know. And he said that he noticed, when he was there 2 weeks ago, he noticed Louis Belon Goyette as being somebody that's very calm on the ball. And so that is that's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I don't know anything. I don't even think I've heard his name before, but that must mean he's underrated. Samuel Piet as well, another young kid who's come up through their ranks. And again, I think he's had some call-ups with the national team recently, you know, and looked okay, but, you know, he's 22 again. He's coming up through their system. It's always good to have local players who've come up through the academy who know how your team plays, because I think Montreal, Toronto to a certain degree, but certainly Vancouver as well, they play right from the bottom to the very top. They play all their teams in a very similar system with very similar coaching. That's only ever going to yield good results, I think, in the long term. So although Montreal's sitting mid-table and has been a little bit of a kind of like will-they-won't-they story this year, they're definitely building something that I think could be really exciting.
For sure. Teams that are going to be building, I think, are the bottom four in the East, including in Philadelphia. All I think between Philadelphia, Orlando, and New England, we've talked before that all of them are good. They just haven't been able to make a click this year, but they have quality within them.
Yeah, I feel like we could almost do sort of four at once because of this. Orlando, to me, is kind of the outlier. I'm just trying to pull up Philadelphia's roster because they're another team that I like need a refresher on who's actually on their team, because they're just... they haven't been particularly interesting to watch.
They got a late career. They got a late career Chris Pontius. CJ Sapong, who had not been there, who had been kind of middle of the pack for goals. Yeah. He's now the lead. Last year is now the lead scorer.
Oh, Bedoya as well.
Yes.
Madungeon, is that his name? Say his name.
I'm not sure.
He's a very lengthy last name that starts with an M. CJ Sapong, that's the player I'm thinking of that's been pretty good for them.
Yes.
Yeah, they're a team that, yeah, looking at their roster sheet, you go like, that's entirely respectable. Like, they've got some known entities. They're, you know, they've got a good mix of sort of players in their mid-20s and some older players with some experience. They don't seem to have a ton of youth coming up through the ranks, but I don't think that's necessarily Philadelphia's system. But they are a team that if you watch them, they always have a chance to draw, and they always have a chance to lose. But they are just so boring to watch, which I know this is just me as a fan, but like they're to me one of the teams that gives MLS a bit of a bad name sometimes, is that, you know, if you're watching a DC United versus Philadelphia or New England versus Philadelphia, you know, you can be doing other things while that match is on, because it just takes so long for play to build up. All these teams really seem to struggle with creativity and speed. Just like they win the ball, they could be in transition, everybody's standing around looking at each other. Philadelphia, rightly so, is probably the best of the bottom four. That they do have some speed and some vision, I think, in CJ Sapong and Bedoya going forward, but just, ugh. Do you have Philadelphia thoughts?
I think that the fan base has always been really supportive, and they have such a nice stadium that it is a shame that they really haven't had a glory period yet. And I think they, when they find a way to start clicking, it'll be exciting, because I think that they have a lot to contribute, but they're just not a factor right now.
No, and you know, they've got a lot of domestic players, which I like to see from any team, but to me they need some sort of talisman to come in. And again, it's odd to me that a team like Philadelphia doesn't make any real moves during the transfer window to try to bring someone in, because at 31 points, they're not out of it. If they put together some results, they could make a run for the playoffs, but it's hard to imagine them overcoming Montreal, Atlanta, or the Red Bulls.
There's such a weird thing going on right now with scheduling, where they lose. Montreal and Atlanta both have, who sit above them in the standings, both have 3 games in hand on them. All 3 teams in 5th, 6th, and 7th are on 24, 25 games. And the teams in 1-4 are on 28-26.
Yeah. If you look just at points, you go like, hey, United, DC United could, in theory, make the playoffs. And then you look at the games and you're like, oh no, they're out. They're super out.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about how Orlando was not really able to... Orlando has had a lot on just the one player in Kaká. What are your thoughts this year with them?
It's odd, because I feel like when I've watched them, they seem to be playing better, and yet they seem to be doing worse. This, to me, is a team that's really bizarre, because, and again, I'm just pulling up the first team roster here to see, but the team sheet, you go like, wow, that's pretty good. You know, okay, Giles Barnes is maybe not a star by any stretch, but his work rate has been excellent while he's been in Orlando. The trade to Vancouver, I think, threw him off, and then the trade to Orlando, I think, made him really pick up his game. As we saw in the game against Vancouver, he came very close to scoring, and he looked dangerous a lot of times. Joe Bendick is a great keeper. Obviously, they just brought in Dom Dwyer, we know all about him. Iguaita is a great player. They've got Will Johnson, who, again, is a player I love to hate, but I'd be very happy to see on a Whitecaps team any day. They've got Kaká. They've got Kyle Larin. Nocerino, who just got a look on the weekend, seems to be a decent, like, Rivas. They've got good players. It doesn't make sense that they're not able to put more together. I'd be very, very frustrated as a coach of this team that they're not able to put together more results and that they give up so many goals and they're not able to generate much going forward, which when you've got Kaká on your team, we can joke all we want about him being in his twilight years, but we're still talking about one of the great players. And unfortunately, too much falls to him. You know, and I know they've struggled with some injuries this season too, but it's hard to imagine a world where Orlando makes it through to the playoffs, and I think they have some big questions to be asking themselves about, as a club, about what they want their identity to be moving forwards, because they're spending an awful lot of money on players that are just not producing enough for them.
Yeah, no, Kaká, for all of his success and his skill, 4 goals is not enough for that designated player role. It's also important to note that they started with 6 wins in 7 games, and then they have gotten very little since April, which is really tough.
Yeah, and we know that in MLS it all really comes down to the final third of the season. And you can be forgiven for a slow start, as we saw with Seattle last year and numerous teams this year. But Orlando just has kind of flatlined, and it's really hard to see them coming back from this. They don't, even in the game against Vancouver, it didn't look like very positive play to lose at home. Luck was against them, sure, but again, they just seem to run out of ideas and they huff and they puff. They had so much possession, so many chances in the box. On another day, they catch Vancouver sleeping. That could have been 5-1 for Orlando. The fact that it wasn't, and this is coming from a Whitecaps fan, says far more about Orlando than it does about Vancouver.
Very true.
They really should have won that game.
How are we going to get New England and DC, two teams that have been part of the bedrock of MLS and had much better times than now? How are they going to get back into the mix the way that Chicago has?
This is a great question. In many ways, I feel like I'm excited to talk about the bottom teams, because DC and New England are two teams that I think have just been totally written off because of their results. Now, in the case of DC, that's pretty easy to do because their goal difference is minus 22. But 44 goals against is, I believe, the worst in the league in both conferences. And only 22 goals, I think, might also be the worst in the league. So their major problems are their defense isn't very good and their offense isn't very good.
Yes.
They fix those two things and then they could be really good. The notes I had on them, though, is that they do have quality on the team. This is not just, oh, they suck. And there haven't been too many total blowouts this year, but there's been an awful lot of losses. That being said, in recent weeks, they've also racked up some wins. Some through luck, some through just really grinding things out. They've got excellent midfield quality. It's the transition. It's who's that midfield passing to. And their defense has just been unacceptably poor. I think for me, rather than totally clean house in the offseason, it's shore up the defense. Clearly the defensive coaching staff is not doing their job either. I mean, you've got to work with what you've got. DC isn't really a team that spends giant amounts of money on players, but if you're going to spend any money at all, you've got to do something about that 44 goals given up. That to me is just, that's really bad.
22 goals is the league low for goals scored. They're on 44. It's the lowest in the East, but just looking at this is actually really surprising. It's 52 for Minnesota is the most goals conceded. And I think it says something about the two conferences when you look at that it is the bottom three teams in terms of goals against are DC on 44, New England on 41, and Columbus on 42. And when you look at the West, there are multiple teams on 44. There are Portland is second, and they have 44 goals against. RSL have 48. It's hard to know what the difference is there, because you were talking about when we were talking earlier, it seems kind of like the West had more defensive-minded teams.
And I think that's been the case. I think for me it's also hard because I watch more Western Conference games, so I see the work that the defense puts in, and even when it hasn't produced a lot of results, you know, like Dallas, for instance, where they've given up some bad goals, but they overall have a pretty good defensive lineup. The difference is in these things is that a team like Columbus is scoring goals and DC United isn't. And again, they've got talent on their team. It's just not been enough for them. And I think they need to really look at bringing in one, probably two really creative midfielders, probably clearing house on the defensive side, which is unfortunate. They've got a good goalkeeper in Bill Hamid, but he just has no love in front of him. And aside from Acosta, they don't have any real goal scorers. And even for what he's getting paid, that's not enough of a production rate to really warrant that amount of money. And this is one of those things where I see is if United just spreads out some of that money and invests in key places on the pitch, they don't need to bring in stars. They have some good players on their roster. They don't need to sell 18 players in the offseason. But they need to get some goals going.
They are finally sorting out their stadium situation, which has been a huge weight both on them and on the league for a number of years. It's going to open in 2018 is the plan, I think. RFK has been, it looks rough in highlights. You never hear good things about it. And it's been that way for years. So,
and hopefully that will inject something into the team. I feel for the supporters. DC United also has a great fan base who, I mean, the fact that people are even turning up to their games anymore at this point in the season says a lot about their club support. But yeah, maybe the new stadium and some new training facilities are what this team needs to kickstart them. But I think they also really lack, again, and for me, this is another team where they do at times look dangerous, but they just also look flat a lot of the time. And they win the ball, and then they don't do anything with it. And I think the 44 goals against says more about their lack of creativity and going forward than it does about their defense just being leaky. You can only sustain so much pressure for so long. But if your midfield and your forwards aren't generating anything in attack, no defense in the world can just sit through game after game after game of 90 minutes of just defending. New England, to me, is a little bit of a stranger case, because overall I feel like they've had an okay season, and I feel like they've got a much better roster than DC does. And why it's not happening for them, I genuinely don't know. What are your thoughts on New England?
Jay Heaps is a great coach. And it's been weird that they haven't been able to secure results. I think that's really what it comes down to, is that they're definitely a team that has quality. And they are a team as well that could beat some of the top teams in the league, which makes it so strange that they're in the position where they're at.
Yeah, I don't quite get it. And I also don't know how they've hung on to some of their players, because they have been consistently not very good over the last few years. The fact that they've been able to hold on to Lee Wynn, I don't know what... Maybe he just enjoys himself. Maybe he just has a really great place in New England, but he is such a player of fantastic quality. I don't know how other MLS clubs have not put in more bids for him, and how New England's managed to keep him. Our old friend Kofi has returned to New England. He's been about as inconsistent for them as he ever was for us.
Yes.
I think New England, it's one of those things where, again, it unfortunately just does come down to consistency. They're a good team, And they've got a good core group of players, but I think when they struggle, they really struggle, and you know, when they go down a goal, they struggle to get back. And because they're not scoring a lot of goals, they know that if they go down 2-0, they're going to be very lucky to eke out a draw. And that's manifested on the field for them this year. I think part of it is a mentality thing as well.
They lost to DC, and I was just trying to look up the New England roster and saw the amazing headline, DC United keeping postseason faith, quote, we are alive.
Yeah. Was that an own goal this week or was that last week? I think it was last week.
That was last week.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know if any will be able to top the awful own goal that the Rapids scored. I showed you that one last week.
Okay. Just going back to the Rapids for 1 second. I mean, I don't want to knock Tim Howard because I think he's a fantastic goalkeeper, but even I think that own goal, I actually think he's a little bit more at fault than, I think, was it Watt who kicked it back? Because
yeah, to sort of explain it, it was Jared Watt had the ball about 10 or 20 yards into his own half and kind of did a quick turn and chip pass back to Tim Howard. And when I showed you that, you noticed that he was out of position.
He was. Well, and I mean, granted, he had just come from a goal kick. And he was sort of outside of the box or close to it. But when you sort of look at the replays, he's wrong-footed. Now, it's the fault of the defender for not knowing where his goalkeeper is and making sure he's ready to receive the ball. However, the goalkeeper also has to be ready to receive the ball back because Watt doesn't have a lot of room to go and he's getting closed down. And Howard is looking the other way and he's not paying attention to the player with the ball. The ball's in their half. There's nothing for Watt to do really but pass it back. The thing I would say with Tim Howard is that he makes a lot of mistakes. I think part of it is because of his team's form, that he's not quite playing at his top quality, but he has given up some bad goals this season, and I can understand how frustrating it must be and how just luckless it must feel to be one of the great American goalkeepers and be at the bottom table with a team that just is not helping you out or doing you any favors. But that own goal for me was kind of emblematic of Colorado is a good team that makes a lot of mistakes, and the mistakes are adding up. That if Tim Howard's paying attention, that's not an own goal. They draw that game instead of lose it.
I feel like we should start wrapping it up soon, but yeah. I would wonder, is there one thing that you kind of hope to see for the end of the year?
Toronto not winning in Moscow.
I mean, no. For the season, yeah, that would be a good one. I wonder if I feel like we're headed for so many rematches.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's MLS. We know there's going to be surprises in store. I think the way that the tables look right now is, and now it'll probably all change, but I feel like it's going to be pretty close to what ends up happening. I think that the West, we're obviously going to see more movement. Toronto, New York City, Columbus, Chicago, Red Bulls, Atlanta making it to the playoffs seems like a pretty logical thing to happen.
I want to see Montreal in there. I don't know how they do it, but
yeah, and you know, it's within their grasp. Like it's really up to them as to whether or not they want to do that. And for me, it's up to the kids now. They've got to come in and make an impact and really play. Make an impact.
What? Yeah. Well, it's at the same time. You can't begrudge Atlanta for making it into the playoffs in their first year. That would be a wonderful story for them. and I'm sure it would help.
And pretty unprecedented as well. I don't believe that's happened before.
Didn't Seattle
make it? Oh, yeah, you're right, yeah. Yeah, if there's things I'd like to see, I'd like to see Atlanta make it into the playoffs, because they're an exciting team to watch. Yeah, they're inconsistent, and they've got stuff to work out, but they're an expansion side, and they're fun to watch. And that's more than you can say for some of the teams that are occupying higher spots in the table. So you just never know with them, and I think that would be kind of fun. Obviously, as a Vancouver fan, I want to see the Whitecaps, first of all, stay in the running and make it to the playoffs. I want to see them win a playoff game, because I think they need to prove it to themselves as a club. And I think it will also help them attract better players in the offseason. They've been slowly, quietly putting together a pretty decent run of results. And so I want to see them continue that and not capitulate and give up bad games like they've been doing. However, if they can keep on doing things like going to Orlando and getting a win, they've been good on the road and any way, anyhow, it'll be good. I don't know what to expect with the playoffs, but I have a sneaking suspicion that we might see a rematch between Toronto and Seattle. And for my money, I think Seattle's better poised to win it because of the things that you mentioned. But boy, if that ends up being the case, Toronto is going to come out firing on all cylinders, and it should be a fun match to watch. With probably some video reviews and probably some stray reds.
They've tried. There was an amazing moment in one of Laura Armstrong's stories about Drew Moore, who's a defender for TFC. That he's got a condo within view of BMO Field, and that the lead was something like he had woken up every day of the off season looking at BMO Field, being like, "How did that fucking happen?"
I love it. And that's, you know, as much as I have to hate Toronto because I just have to, but I really admire how far they've come, and that it's easy to just say, well, they've spent a ton of money and that's why they're at the top. Well, that may be true and it's paid off for them. It's the individual performances of some of their other players, as well as the overall team performance, that they're playing for each other. And something like a heartbreaking loss in the final on penalties is going to galvanize a team like nothing else. And I actually think that them losing last year is why they're winning this year. It's because they just woke up and went, that can't happen again, and let's prove ourselves. We're not just a one-trick pony. Let's play for each other. And you see that a lot more now, is that as a whole team, everyone's stepping it up. Everyone's playing for each other. When they lose the ball, they're quickly trying to go back and get it. The fact that you see Giovinco tracking back and defending in games, that's, to me, that's a team that has a massive chip on their shoulder and wants to really badly to win that cup. They're not going to be happy with just the supporter shield.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to get some mittens.
Yeah, when they're playing on Christmas Day.
Yeah, oh wow. The best line when I was at the MLS Cup final, because ticket reselling happened so much in Toronto, the tickets were very expensive. I was able to find a seat with the Seattle supporters. And one of the things that will stick with me from that evening, from seeing fans, especially traveling fans, celebrating their team's championship, was there was a girl who was sitting in front of me. Again, everybody is super bundled. Everybody has heavy jackets, scarves, toques, because it was bitter cold. And they seat away supporters in the highest room of the tallest tower at BMO Field. And the new roof really channels wind up in that direction. And they had won. Everybody was losing their minds. And this girl turns around to me and says, "I'm so warm. I've never been so warm in my life."
Oh, that's beautiful. And, you know, I have to admit, watching that final, I felt dirty doing it, but I was kind of cheering for Seattle just because of the season that they'd had. And I thought it was kind of beautiful and poetic that the guy who scores the winning goal is Roman Torres, who has since moved on from the team. So if it comes to penalties, it's going to be up to Deuce and his friends to deliver on it. But I thought that that was sort of like such a perfect MLS victory of like it goes to penalties. You've got one of the highest scoring teams playing one of the up until that point worst teams in the league, who fires their coach halfway through the season, makes it to the final, and then their center back scores the final penalty goal. Like, that's so MLS.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for chatting today.
Yeah, not at all. Thank you. And I guess, you know, the next time we'll have a little bit more of a sort of match-to-match thing now that we've got a state of the nation, a line that's been drawn.
This is the double issue primer for the mid-season.
Exactly.
To catch you up on the part of this season that actually matters.
Yeah, this is like the Game of Thrones intro that's longer than the actual episode.
Well, I am Andrew Bates. You are Nick Thornton.
Yeah, that's me.
Where can we find you online?
So I think the easiest way for people to get a hold of me is on Twitter, at Thorntonosity. I don't talk about soccer all the time on there, but that's a good place to find me.
I'm online at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com, where you can also find my soccer blog, Little Rubber Pellets. And check out Howler, whatahowler.com. The new issue will be coming out soon. It will be really good.
Cool. All right, buddy.